Hello, and happy I am to be with you again. Criminal though he was at heart and in action, no modern crook who lived by his wits has equaled Walter Sheridan in dash, daring, and devotion to crooked schemes. The more educated and intelligent the professional criminal, the more of a threat he becomes to society, and the more difficult is his apprehension and conviction. Sheridan is a shining example of the uselessness of a criminal life, for as you shall see, in spite of all his cunning, intellect, and astuteness, he could not remain outside the coils of the law. Sheridan took to hotel work early in his life, having been trained by the sharpest of all that gentry, one Joe Moran. But 3 years of seeming success found him doing his first bit in state's prison. Released, Sheridan tied into a mob of bank sneaks. For this work, he was admirably fitted by his quick thinking, ready tongue, fine appearance, and remarkable poise and balance. The record shows that their first job netted them $35,000 from the First National of Springfield, Illinois. Stratagem, cleverness of planning, daring of execution, not the gun, were the weapons of the sneaks. Later, his gang, of which he had become the leader and mastermind, successfully obtained $50,000 from a fire insurance company and still later $37,000 from the Mechanics Bank of Scranton. Thus, his seeming success continued until he was reported to be worth close to $250,000. Then he fell, at the very time he thought it least likely. That's life. He tried to rob the First National of Cleveland. The sneak on the job, working swiftly and silently while other members of the gang drew attention away from him, was grabbed with his hands on $32,000. And Sheridan was arrested. Like all smart crooks, he was highly incensed over this outrage, this arrest. That had the effect he intended upon the first magistrate to hear the charges. Thus the old trick of low bail worked again. He was free on a bond of $7,000. And, of course, he forfeited it and was away. The Eye, as the Pinkerton agency was and still is known to the denizens of the jungles of crime, was then handling all thefts from American Bankers Association members, so they took up the trail. By clever detective work, the manhunters traced Sheridan to the town of Hudson, Michigan. Ascertaining there that he owned the principal hotel together with much other property, the detectives registered and were assigned to a room. They soon discovered that Sheridan's brother-in-law was the manager. William Pinkerton was assisting his father, Alan, in this case. Desperately in need of corroboration for their assumption that Sheridan was the man they sought, the young detective broke into the quarters of the owner and obtained a good photograph of Sheridan. It was immediately copied and appeared throughout the world. Sheridan finally came to see his relatives. All crooks finally may be found seeking association of other humans, those closest to them. The Pinkertons made no mistake of seizing him there, but instead followed him with a close shadow, as it is called, and arrested him in Sandusky, Ohio. En route to Chicago, he made a most desperate effort to escape and was nearly successful. So many criminals are nearly successful. But he had to face trial again, and although his legal defense is said to have cost him better than $20,000, it was evident during the trial that he was plainly guilty. Then astute counsel commenced the technical moves that remain today the shame of our national courts. Those very things originally created for the protection of the innocent were twisted by conscienceless counsel to benefit the guilty prisoner. The cleverness of this tactical misuse of the technicalities of the law freed Sheridan. He became cocksure, went east, and became the moving spirit in a series of criminal operations that at that time were outstanding in the history of crime. Gigantic and daring depredations realized loot easily worth $300,000 in the robbery of the Fall City Tobacco Bank. Shortly after this, failing to be convicted, Sheridan saw fit to set up his standing in the social scale. He maintained a great show of respectability, spending much time and money on the cultivation of refined, cultured, and intellectual friends and associates of unquestioned standing. It seemed on the surface, Having accumulated his fortune by crooked schemes, he now sought to live out his life an honest man. But such conclusions were unaffected by the currents that ran far below the surface. In fact, he was planning even greater schemes than ever. Forgery of dazzling quantities of securities was his plan, and he executed it with the same daring and colossal cleverness that had marked his entire career. Appearing as one Ralston from sunny California, he bought a membership in the old Produce Exchange of New York and speculated heavily in grain. While this was part of his front for his newest brainchild, he maintained a secret headquarters, a broker's office on Broadway. By these operations, he established the man Ralston as one of integrity, considerable wealth, and wide operations in grain futures. All his obligations were paid promptly and in cash. This built him up as a large operator. Having thus created confidence upon a large scale, he set in motion the real purpose of his plot. He arranged matters so that he might become acquainted with the president of the New York Indemnity Company. Weeks of time and much cash was spent to ingratiate himself in the confidence of that honest man. Finally, Sheridan, alias Ralston, moved, and swiftly. He confided to his new friend his wish to purchase some real estate. For the purchase, he needed cash. To get it, he would be happy to put up $125,000 in gilt-edged railroad bonds for a cash loan of some $45,000. The deal was easily consummated, for the bonds appeared genuine and were eagerly accepted. This was the first move. Others quickly followed according to plan. When all the loans made in all ways and by all the Confederates in the plot had been made, it was finally discovered that the bonds were forgeries, marvelous ones, but forgeries nonetheless. Wall Street brokers, various companies and institutions had been victimized to a total that was said to have netted Sheridan, alias Ralston, close to a cool million in genuine money. So carefully had the swindle been perpetrated that Sheridan had cashed in, divided the loot, separated his gang, and himself crossed the Atlantic with all of his genuine assets turned into cash before the discovery of forgery and swindle was made. It was during this visit to Europe that it had been claimed he created and perhaps engineered the great Bank of England swindle for which others were convicted. It is definitely known, however, that while abroad he successfully distributed another $200,000 of the forged railroad securities. The furor aroused by his monumental nerve and the astounding success of his New York swindle could beat uselessly against the shores of England, for extradition for his particular offense had then not yet been covered by treaty, so he was immune to follow his criminal operations there in Europe. Having rid himself of this latest threat, as has been said, he cleaned up another fortune there. That was an error. It left him no sanctuary in which a man of his preferences might live beyond the reach of the long arm of the law. Scotland Yard became unostentatiously interested in him. He keenly enough sensed that fact and made the error that was to break him. He returned to the United States. But he returned as Sheridan, the master swindler might be expected to return. He was unheralded, arrived on an unknown freighter carrying but 6 passengers, and entered through a little known port. He turned up in Denver as Mr. Walter A. Stewart, a man of considerable wealth, noticeable refinement, and remarkable business acumen. He branched out in business, and it was a good one, legitimate, strange to say. In passing, it is not amiss to note here that in honest endeavor he was highly successful, yet clever as he was, he never had thought of the sound sense from the outset of confining his genius to honorable effort and thus avoiding the hounding of the law. This latest and only honest effort was as a wholesale florist and landscape gardener. His profits mounted. Then he organized a bank of his own. It, too, was honorably officered and directed. He had seen to that. He had no accomplices. But again, the mania to be crooked obsessed him. He entered upon a wild orgy of speculation, and by a slow process, his personal funds were rapidly depleted. But the arm of efficient law enforcement is long and reaches out into strange places to snatch up the cleverest. So it was to be with Sheridan, alias Ralston, alias Walter A. Stewart. His heavy commitments in the New York market during the process of his speculative spree in mining stocks, probably induced by his Denver associations, marked him as worthy of investigation. Keen detective brains had for some time been tracing his past. He was closely watched. Finally, he did as all others before him who gamble had done. He faced the need for collateral he did not have. His past success in forging was the peg upon which he hung his latest coat of hopes. He offered hurriedly forged securities as collateral for loans with which to bolster his market deals. Those securities were carefully scrutinized, found to be forgeries, and he was arrested. The rest was easy. He was immediately identified as the Ralston of the railroad security forgery of some time before, convicted and served his time. The star of his masterly success was on the decline, for fate was dealing the losing hands that fall to the lot of the criminally inclined. Upon his release, he foolishly resorted to plain robbery, which was not his forte. He was convicted for the theft of a tray of unset diamonds. He served time for that, and while incarcerated, he heard of a counterfeiter of considerable reputation who would be free at about the time of his release. So he hunted him up, formed an alliance there, and in no time at all was seized by officers of the United States Secret Service. Possession of counterfeit currency was the charge. Again, he was sentenced, and this time to a federal prison. Twice after his release, he was apprehended, each time guilty of some lesser crime in the gamut he had run, each time more easily convicted. Sheridan, the master swindler, had gone the way of all the beasts of the jungle. He had been consumed by the fever of greed and easy money, the same fever that strikes down finally those strange denizens who prefer the threatened certain death of a life of crime to a normal existence. He died a pauper, unattended, and his body was placed in a pauper's grave. And now, my friends, for a personal message. If you have a problem, something that's worrying you, no matter what, whether it has to do with crime or not, makes no difference. Trust me. Write me in confidence at my hometown, Laguna Beach. I'll spell it for you. L-A-G-U-N-A. Laguna Beach, California. Write me there, mark it confidential, and I'll do my best to help you. Well, the hand on the face of that clock's racing round again, and I'm sorry. Adios. Till next time.